Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the Inside Out LGBT Collective on WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. The Inside Out Collective comes to you live every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern. You can stream our show at WPFWFM.org or catch us on the podcast app by searching WPFW Inside Out Collective. My name is Hansi Stokes, and I am so happy to be back on air. It's my first show of the new year as part of the collective, bringing you the voices and stories of queer and trans folks from across the DMV. These are stories about us, for us, by us. Before we hop into today's topic, I want to take a moment to recognize the privilege it is to have a show like this on public radio and why I'm honored to be a part of the WPFW team. As the old saying goes, you cannot be what you cannot see. And in this case, you can't be what you can't hear. When I first heard Inside Out Collective shows, I was absolutely blown away that there were people on public radio talking about the issues that really matter to our community, and that the people hosting those stories were members of that community. And, you know, better yet, that they were talking about our community here in the DMV area. But the Inside Out Collective is just, you know, one small part of this incredible force that is WPFW, DC's jazz and justice station. No matter what time you tune in, you are going to find stories, music, voices, and programming that push us to think critically and invite people of all backgrounds and identities to learn from one another. But just as we are bringing you the sounds and stories of our community, we can't stay on the air without your support. So if you've ever been impacted by something you heard on our show or on our station, I invite you to help keep these programs going by making a donation to WPFW today. When you make a financial contribution to WPFW, you are helping us inspire and inform our communities. You can make a pledge or donation by calling 202-588-9739 or by going online to pledge.wpfwfm.org. All right, let's get on with the show.
And sometimes it's easier to skip a day, but you can't skip leg day on being in love. You know what I mean?
That's Charlie, one of the people you'll be hearing from on today's show. Once again, welcome. I'm Hansi Stokes, and I'm really excited to be talking about one of my favorite topics today, love. The first thing you need to know about me going into today's show is that I love love. I always have. It just brings me so much joy to hear people gush about their partners or their friends. Just have them, you know, listen to them talk about the role that love plays in their lives. When I think about the things that have shaped my personal view of love, especially when it comes to romantic love, which is a lot of what we'll be talking about today, I'm often reminded of bell hooks's All About Love. In particular, she has this section on sweet love where she talks about what a disservice it is for us to call it falling in love, that by doing so, we are passive. We're not taking responsibility for our actions within a relationship because it's just something that's happened to us. And she presents this idea instead that we choose love, that we choose to love other people, another person. She writes, "Yet when we commit to true love, we are committed to being changed, to being acted upon by the beloved in a way that enables us to be more fully self-actualized. This commitment to change is chosen." You know, I find that passage so powerful because it really looks at this transformative power of love, but that it's only possible to be changed by it when we choose to lean into it. And when we do so, it brings us growth, it brings us community, partnership, it allows us to be vulnerable. And that's not to say that it's not work, as many of us who have been in love and choose to be in love know. it's hard work sometimes, but that by choosing to love, it's actually a radical act. My guests today each offer their own perspectives on love and relationships with a special focus specifically on queer love. This is the Inside Out LGBT collective after all. And by no means are the stories that you're going to hear today meant to be representative of the whole community, but they aim to offer an insight into the celebration of queer people in love. I don't think that's something that we see a lot in the media. And so I really wanted to bring that to our listeners today. So I'll introduce you to our voices, our guests today, as they answer what seems like a fairly short question, but in truth is something that is pretty difficult to name. What does love mean to you?
I think that's kind of a complicated question because I think there are so many things that love is. Love is like community. Love is finding relationships with other people in like the romantic way and in the platonic way and in the family way. And love is just like a feeling in your chest that you can identify and you're like, I know. It's kind of hard to just like pick what love is. I know what love isn't. And love isn't necessarily feeling constrained, isn't necessarily feeling controlled. Love is not being told what love is. Love is finding a way to make love work. I think about this a lot. A song that I really love, I'm a playlist maker. And so I, over the course of my long-term relationship, have made like 15 playlists for my partner. And one of the songs that resonates most with me it's a song that's called I Choose You. And for me, love is making the choice to consistently be working towards being better, not only as an individual, but in a partnership. But Toni Morrison's Jazz has a section where it kind of also talks about the same sort of idea of just like constantly committing to being a better version of yourself every single day. And also doing that through, you pick somebody and they pick you back. And it's a remarkable thing to be chosen and to always have to constantly be living up to being chosen.
As an ethically non-monogamous person who sees herself as pretty much having been that way without having the words for it, since as far as I can remember, I think I've always had a complex and non-traditional understanding of and relationship to love. So this question of what love means to me is something that I have been exploring quite intensely recently, actually, trying to just understand better what relationships mean to me, what my role in them means to me, et cetera. The other day, something that I took down as I've been kind of, poking people and asking them about how they define it. Faith was one of these people, actually was the first person that I did this with. One of the definitions was interesting to me that I just wrote down yesterday. So I'm still exploring this. This is not my answer. It was kind of the combination of infatuation, trust, play, and this idea of I see something in you that I want to commit to.
I have a very literal definition of love that's like I've weirdly just had my whole life. I can't remember like when I first conceived of love this way, but it's just a very simple question. Would I step in front of a bullet for that person? And if the answer is yes, I love them. Romantic love, friend love, platonic love, family love, all of it. If I love you, if we're in harm's way, I would try to protect you.
I think that's a really big question. And I think that there are 1,000 ways to answer it. And I think there are 1,000 right ways to answer it. For me, it is, I think a way to describe it is just a fullness and a completeness. And I think that can apply to a lot of different relationships, whether that's self-love or romantic love or friendship. But I think that for me, the easiest way is to describe it is fullness and feeling complete and whole.
I think to build on that, the wholeness part resonates with me, like being able to be your whole self, I think that that's something that I really cherish in our relationship, and something that for me helps inform the types of friendships that I want to have, and the family relationships that I hold really dear to me are the ones where I don't have to censor myself, and I can be who I am, and I can, you know, I'm accepted for all of that. So I think a wholeness. I mean, I find a lot of joy in love. I think that, again, for our relationship specifically, but then just generally, we have so much fun. we just have a really good time together, and he makes me laugh really hard all the time. And that's really fun for me. It just, it makes it so easy. It makes even the really, the harder things really easy. I think that we have the type of trust, and one of the things I really value is that I think to be able to make light of a hard situation requires a lot of trust and requires a lot of vulnerability. So, you know, that's something that I really cherish.
We're now going to dive deeper into each of these three different relationships. You'll first hear from Charlie, who is a 23-year-old living in Washington, D.C. And while they spoke to me by themselves, they were sitting across the table from their fiance, M, while on the video call. My conversation with Charlie not only touched on their relationship with M and their upcoming wedding this fall, but they also touch on what it's like to date a trans person as a trans person, showing queer love through haircuts and finding community through love.
Oh, I'm going to get in trouble. But this is not the first time that I've felt this feeling, but this is a story that I tell all the time. So over one summer, my partner and I were, we'd been together for less than a year. I'm already getting the face. And we were doing, as young queer and trans people do, some shenanigans. We were going out. It was like Pride Month. So it was like a whole month of activities. We were drinking too much, all that sort of stuff. And somebody got too sick. And so we were sitting in the bathroom in my shared apartment with a bunch of other queer people. So it was disgusting. And we're sitting on my floor in my bathroom so that somebody could throw up in the toilet. And earlier in the week, we were talking about Fleetwood Mac, and they were not very exposed to Fleetwood Mac before we started dating, which you're welcome for doing that for you. And so basically we were talking about, I was talking about how Rumors is the greatest album ever made, of course, duh. And so they're like trying to not throw up and also trying to throw up, you know how you do. And I was like, honey, you listened to Rumors for the first time, what did you think? And they said, you know, it was okay. I said, Rippers by Fleetwood Mac is okay. And like in that moment, I felt it. I was like, I know that I'm in love with this person. And I know that they're making an absolute disgusting mess in my bathroom right now, but I know that I am going to be there for them through this. And also like for as many other things as they'll let me be there for, because I love them. And because what kind of person says Fleetwood Mac's Rumors is only okay? I first knew I wanted to marry M because, like I kind of alluded to, I was kind of a little bit head in the clouds and a little bit wrong all the way through. We dated once, we broke up. Well, we didn't really break up. We did the thing that lesbians do where we fizzled away. And then I asked him out again. And then we actually broke up because they went abroad. And so third time's a charm. Third, first date, we walked down to the National Mall and we sat in Lincoln Memorial and we talked about like our feelings and our vision for our future. And like, by the time that we were like 2 or 3 weeks into dating again for the third time, I was like, okay, we are going to get married and that is going to be final. I remember we started dating, honey, when did we start dating? Like, give me a month, June-ish. And like, I was out hanging out with my sister at home in like July. And I was talking to my sister about, okay, here's when Em and I are gonna move in together. And like, here's when we are gonna get married. And so, like I said, I'm an organizer. I had a strategic plan. I got us to the parts that we needed to. And now we're getting married. And so I'm super excited about that. I think being married means a lot of weird things, but I also think it doesn't mean like, it means a lot and I'm really excited. I can't wait to be married to the love of my life. But at the same time, I'm not really sure that all that much is gonna change for us. We've lived together for 2 years now. And being married is just like another like special legal fund benefit for us. I think we've got our own financial decisions already being made. We're already thinking about like what would moving into a house be like, all that sort of stuff. Marriage is just a checkbox, I think, but I think it's an important one because a lot of people worked very hard for the ability for us to say that marriage is a checkbox. But yeah, I'm really excited to get married. I'm starting to get a little nervous about our wedding and the coronavirus, but fingers crossed that we have things figured out by October, which is when we're supposed to be getting married. But we're trying very hard to make it as inclusive to everybody as possible, and that means my family, that means my Texas family, the New Jersey family, the New Jersey Catholics, all of our queer friends, everybody from New York and from California and from Washington, D.C. And so we're trying more than anything to make this a space that everybody can have a good time and enjoy. So that's definitely a challenge. But I think some things that I'm really excited about are our blended wedding parties. I have a wedding party. They have a wedding party. We made jerseys, football jerseys for the members of our wedding party that said Team Everett on them. That was pretty fun. And we're basically just letting people come as they are to our wedding. And I think that's going to make it even more fun because it's going to be in a barn, which is amazing. I am so excited about our barn. I'm so excited about we're going to walk each other down the aisle, and that's going to be really exciting. And I can't wait to just do it. We're just going to be like we're already a great team. And so I can't wait for everybody to have the opportunity to celebrate us. Love also takes on loving what I would call a chosen family, which would be a big, messy conglomeration of queer people that I love, who I know enough about love to know that we can't live together anymore, because love does not change the fact that some people don't know how to wash a bathtub. Yeah, you're making that face, you understand. Co-living in Washington, D.C. could be its own podcast for sure, and I'm sure it is. One of the most cherished experiences I had in college is I lived in an apartment with like a rotating cast of 5 to 6 different queer people. And it was a messy apartment and I was deeply unhappy about how messy it was, but I loved being in community the whole time and being able to knock on a friend's door and say like, I had a bad day, let's talk about it, let's have a beer, like let's debrief. And for me, love is also like recognizing how people change over time and recognizing when there's times to grow and when there's times to be in community, and finding community in these times is kind of hard. It's really hard to be able to be connected to people. Zoom is my worst nightmare. My screens hurt. You're saying, sorry, no worries. I already signed up for this. Screens make my head hurt really bad. And so I have to use my Zoom for my job, but it's really hard for me to use my Zoom for my friends. So sometimes love means meeting me where I am and doing phone calls, or it means thinking about how we can negotiate coronavirus boundaries to see what's the best way that we can meet everybody. And this is a terrible time for everyone, and it's a terrible time for feeling like you're disconnected from people. Right now I'm feeling a little disconnected from people, but I know that in time all things will be better. The snow will eventually melt and thaw, and I'll be able to see and hold the people that I love as soon as we all get all of the vaccines that we need. But gosh, it sucks right now. It's the little things. I was talking to my partner the other day and I was like, I miss cutting my friend's hair so bad. I miss like the little teeny tiny love things I think that queer chosen families have that maybe we do or do not have with our families. It's like cutting each other's hair. That's like a very, very visceral form of love for me. It's like helping people see themselves as they want to be seen, and also having a way to be in physical touch. I think there's also like for queer people, it's an opportunity to redefine everything about what love is supposed to be. And so when in particular, I'm a trans person marrying a trans person, so we get to decide what all the rules are for everything. Negotiating gender roles and negotiating household chores, negotiating gender roles and negotiating getting married. I think the world has way too much gender going on for everyone. But I think in particular, like queer people do experience love differently. And I think it's a very like I find a lot of pride in being like, yes, this is the choice that we are making to do this differently. It is one, a rejection of everything that sucks, and two, an embrace of a world that kind of matches our more moral imagination, where we can like think about how we can be more kind and more loving and more generous to each other. They are the kindest, sweetest, gentlest person, truly never gotten in a fight in their life, which I respect. They are crying right now. So I will continue to look at you while I say it. They are compassionate, they are kind, they're creative. They're someone who is always just head in a book. And so they know so many more things about the entire world than I do. They want to be a librarian when they grow up, and I think they're going to be a really great librarian because they're going to be great with kids. And I just grow so much in learning about seeing myself from their perspective. Makes me more confident. It makes me more empowered to be the kind of person that I want to be. I have not dated anyone except for my wife in like a long time. But what I can say is that I am a trans person dating to marry another trans person. And I think that that means everything. Before I dated Em, I hadn't really dated another trans person. And there's something that's just so unsaid about not having to explain yourself about being transgender, and about like when I have a bad day, like related to my gender, and I'm having gender dysphoria, and I'm having a bad day of being perceived, like my wife gets it. And we know how to work on it together. We know what it means to like buy clothes on the internet together by like thinking like, is this gonna be something that's gonna make me feel good or not? Or we are well practiced at picking clothes out for each other when we are having bad days, and we're well practiced in thinking about like, oh man, now that I'm on T, are we gonna look like a heterosexual couple? The answer is no. But thinking about like, for me, being in a transgender relationship with another, with a whatever, T for T, it's everything, because it's just one less barrier that we have to overcome. And we are just, it's something that makes it easy to think about gender separately and together. You know, we are both non-binary, but the way that we think about non-binary is not the same, because no two non-binary people have the same gender. So it's been something that's been a cornerstone of our relationship, but it's not something that exclusively defines it. I love being in love. I love that we're getting married. I love that we're building a family. And I can't wait to spend the rest of my life with my wife.
I want to thank Charlie for joining me and for sharing the story of their queer love and their relationship with M, as well as what love means for them in a community context. One of the things Charlie and I talked about in relation to the idea of haircuts as an act of love is this meme that I once saw on Twitter, which said, "True queer love is fixing your partner's nose ring." And that is something that I very much resonate with. My girlfriend likes to pop my nose ring back into place when it kind of readjusts itself. And I've got other friends who have septum piercings, and their partners help straighten them out when they go askew. And it's just these small acts that can be so intimate. And, you know, I think that idea of helping your friends present themselves in a way to the world as they already see themselves is one of the most intimate things, and most personal things that you can do for someone that you love. Before we continue to hear from our two other couples today, I want to remind you that we are just kicking off our WPFW Winter Pledge Drive that helps support the station and brings you shows like the one you're listening to today, but also brings you stories from across the DMV, gives you perspectives into how different communities are being impacted by the world around us and what they're doing to push their communities forward. Our theme this winter is building a better world, one broadcast at a time. And I truly believe that the world is a better place with more love in it. So I invite you today to make a pledge or donation by calling 202-588-9739 or by going online to pledge.wpfwfm.org. We can't do this without the support of listeners like you.
Also, I just want to add that something really cute and funny happened right now where I got distracted for 1 second because Faith's other partner, my metamor, just sent me a message on Instagram, which I think is just a cute little Polly thing to happen as we're talking.
I also spoke with Faith and Nikki, who are partners in an ethically non-monogamous relationship. If you're not familiar with ethical non-monogamy, it's often used as an umbrella term for romantic or sexual relationships that are not monogamous. You may have heard the word polyamorous thrown around as another descriptor, and that's just one of the many structures these kinds of relationships can take on. Essentially, they are relationships where individuals have more than one partner, but a key component is that everyone involved in the relationship is aware of the setup and consents to be a part of it. While they do date other people as well, I spoke with Jess, Faith, and Nikki, who are celebrating 3 years together this month. Both Nikki and Faith are therapists. While they met in DC, they've been doing long distance for the last year and a half as Faith finishes up school. Their conversation looks at what their love teaches them, the influence of family on their relationships, logistics during COVID, and how their shared identities help strengthen their partnership.
I feel like a big thing that has really changed for me over the course of me dating Nikki was that my relationship prior to Nikki was, I was in a physically and emotionally abusive relationship with another queer person. And then I broke up with them and I was single for 7 months, which is like the longest I've ever been single for. And then I met Nikki, who like so exceeded my standards that I was like waiting for the other shoe to drop. And then she was also like, you need to have higher standards for yourself. You have like way too low of standards for partners in your life and like people who are gonna have like a deep, loving relationship with you. And she was very, very right. So Nikki definitely taught me to like raise the bar. And now I kind of, you know, like when I'm meeting new people, like what Nikki thinks of them is really important to me because she does have a good understanding of like what I deserve. And she helped show me what I deserve.
For me, even before I come into queer love, queerness for me was something that I only really got to embrace and explore later in life because I spent about 25 years living in Turkey where, you know, queerness is not interacted with in gracious manners, let's say. And so it was kind of almost in this like big lump where I started interacting with my queerness and therefore queer love, non-monogamy and kink all kind of together. They're all super strong identities for me at this point. Yeah, queer love has come to mean a lot to me. And Faith is my first long-term queer relationship. And it's just been, you know, I've she's seen me go through a high turnover rate. And, you know, through that, she has been just such a giant anchor and somewhere I always knew I was gonna feel understood. where I wasn't really going to have to explain myself and my context as a queer cis woman interacting with things. We also just share pretty much all of our identities, maybe except for immigrant. So that I think is just a really different connection where you don't have to explain yourself or your context so much. So I know that I can always rely on her in that way. And also, I think one of the biggest things for me has just been the ways in which we can see eye to eye so effortlessly.
One of the reasons that I now believe that it's like, it's not too good to be true. Like there, another shoe is not gonna drop. It's like my parents have an extremely beautiful monogamous relationship. They've been together for over 30 years. They're best friends. They never fight. Like they just have such a beautiful relationship. Growing up, I used to always say I wanted to have a relationship like theirs. And they would tell me that that was unreasonable and that it wasn't gonna happen. They're like, it's unlikely that you will have a relationship as amazing and beautiful and easy as ours. And what my relationship with Nikki feels as wonderful and beautiful and easy as theirs.
You know, that's both adorable and kind of funny because when I came out to my parents, they were extremely supportive. I would also, by the way, just to clarify, I would say the same thing about my parents, you know, just the best mono-hetero relationship I can think of, which I think our parents are super similar as well.
It's weird.
Our families are just similar, except I'm an only child. But when I came out to my parents, it was pretty much like all support. And the one thing that they said that was, you know, maybe like a quarter of an inch away from support was... Not even, no. The one thing that they said that I suppose voiced some form of regret about what I was sharing with them, especially around non-monogamy, was that they would have wanted me to have a relationship like theirs, which they very quickly followed with, but even in a monogamous world, it is so hard to come by.
That's so true. My parents... were not super open to me when I came out as poly. Coming out as queer, no problem at all. Coming out as poly, they were like, they had a problem with that. And I think they really just, I mean, they told me they thought that polyamory is like something fun to do in your 20s. And then eventually you find someone that you care about committing enough to that you settle down into monogamy. And it did take a while for my parents to get on board and realize like Nikki is my forever person. I'm going to be with her forever. And that never is monogamy going to be a part of that. Being polyamorous and making the decision that that was how I wanted all my relationships to be moving forward was like the most like affirming and freeing thing. Like I feel it's so deeply part of me being polyamorous and I love that I can do it. COVID is the first time that I've been like, ugh, kind of sucks that I'm polyamorous because it's a lot of risk to manage. So I have two other partners who see people and have their own bubbles. And Nikki has a handful of partners that also see people and have their own bubbles. And it's been really, really hard, like not just considering what risks I'm willing to take to see Nikki and what risks Nikki's willing to take to see me, because all of our other partners have to be a part of the conversation too. So there's like so much more dialogue, so much more like, let me check with my partners, you check with your partners, we'll meet back, we'll discuss a date. Like it's just so much logistics and planning, and we have to quarantine from our other partners to see each other. It sucks. It really sucks. I think I've gotten more secure in it. Again, like at the beginning, I was really waiting for the other shoe to drop. I was just like constantly afraid. Clearly I had trauma from other relationships. Navigating like Nikki's married and I had to navigate like, how is that gonna influence my role in her life and the steps that we make moving forward together and things like that. And I think I felt, just insecure that like it wasn't gonna last or that like I was really, really 100% into the relationship and I like wasn't totally sure if Nikki was also 100% into the relationship or just like acting like she was. but I don't think about that at all anymore. I think we've both made it very clear to each other the level of our commitment, and I never ever question that.
The part about commitment has kind of turned into a sense of family for me. And that for me means our relationship can morph a million times. It can look all sorts of different ways to me. I am not married to the way that it looks today. Certainly not the long distance. I really hope that changes ASAP. But it's kind of the sense of like, come what may, that has stuck with me, that no matter what comes, I think we will adjust. Like, I would rather our relationship change form drastically than not have faith in my life.
First of all, our minds are always on the same page, which is so nice. Mm-hmm. One of the things I love is like, we, anytime we go out to eat, again, like not happening during COVID, but pre-COVID times, every single time we go out to eat, I'll be like deciding between two options. Nikki will be deciding between two options. I'm like, what are you thinking about getting? She tells me what her two options are. They're the same two options I want. So we always just like get both and then we share them. We do a lot of food sharing. So it's like things like that. It's just like constant reminders that like, you're such a good fit for me. Like, this is my person. We get each other. We can talk for hours. I think like one thing that was a really early tell for me that like this relationship was different was that we didn't take many pictures together at the beginning. We still don't have, we don't have that many pictures together for like 3 years of dating, but it's because like, we're always so into each other when we're together. Like, we can talk and talk and talk and talk for hours. And I haven't looked at my phone, which is like, I'm always attached to my phone. It's always on me. So like, same, the fact that we don't have pictures together, I think like shows how like wrapped up we are always are in each other when we're together.
I'm realizing as we're talking about this, well, first off, let me say the gushy is amazing. And also it's making me miss Faith so much and just getting to have that regularly so much. But I embrace that because it just speaks to the beauty of our time together. But one thing that I'm realizing we haven't mentioned at all is that we are both people that deal with chronic pain. And so the way that we like to hang out also looks super similar. So we're both kind of like, I'm going to use the words low effort. I think it's clear what I mean by context. So like kind of hanging out, watching stuff, listening to stuff, talking about the stuff we're watching or listening. I would say the biggest thing is games, play games all day. We both love games. You know, hang out with our animals, just do cute shit, you know, like I'll do her makeup, whatever, whatever, sometimes, rarely.
I do it more often, but.
That's something that I don't get a lot in my other relationships, especially with folks who are able-bodied or don't deal with chronic pain. It's this kind of like, when I might dread, you know, the energy I need to muster up for a lot of other interaction. With Faith, I'm like, anytime, anywhere, like, you know, even if I'm dead to the world, I'll have a good time with you. So that means a lot to me.
And I can't believe disability. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Nothing. I was just gonna say that it's something that can make me feel insecure in my other relationships. And the fact that it's kind of just like where we're both at by default makes me feel super safe and secure. You were saying?
I was going to say, I can't believe that disability hasn't come up yet.
Yeah, I know.
But it is huge. Like, I also say, like, the abusive relationship that I was in before Nikki was also with someone who has chronic pain. And we actually had, like, the same diagnosis. We got diagnosed on the same day. And I was very much in that relationship. I was like, well, we're never going to find anyone to really love us because we're just, like, disabled lumps on a log. Like, we have nothing to offer. And then I met Nikki, who has never ever for a sec, like, I just have all my own personal guilt and internalized ableism and all of that that I've had to work through. And Nikki has like never ever added to that. And I think part of her protecting has also been, I think both of us, our protection comes out in like, please take care of your body. Like what can I do to help your pain?
There are so many things that make me like giddy and screaming at my phone screen because of something that Faith has shared. And you know, that ranges from her interaction with animals, who we're both obsessed with, to just how cute she is, to, I don't know, like us talking about something important that might require some form of pre-existing framework or understanding of a certain issue. And we'll just talk and see how much we already readily agree and how much we can kind of build on top of what we already agree on through dialogue. And that's also something that just, whenever I walk away from those talks is, I feel like when I feel the most in love with her.
Our final couple today is Beck and Kelsey, who recently got engaged this past December on Beck's birthday. Kelsey founded Rainbow Doula, an agency dedicated to supporting queer and trans birthing folks, and is pursuing a degree to become a nurse practitioner, while Beck is an attorney for the military. A big theme of Kelsey and Beck's story involves visibility and what it means to be seen within a relationship as a couple and in the public eye. The double-edged sword of visibility is especially prevalent in their relationship, as Beck is a trans man and could not be out in his place of work in the Army under Trump's transgender military service ban, which has since been reversed by President Biden. Through Kelsey and Beck's interview, you'll hear them discuss ideas around self-love, trust, and how we navigate showing up and supporting our partners.
I think for me, the trust aspects in love I've grown to have a better appreciation of what that actually means. I think I used to think it meant trust in terms of like fidelity, in terms of, you know, is this person, do I trust this person to not cheat on me, for example? And now I just have such a deeper appreciation of, for example, I know and trust that when Beck tells me something, he's telling me the truth. He's not holding any part of him back. And same with, I know that he trusts me to mean what I say when I say it to him. And that just allows us to have just like, you know, to cut through a lot of the bullshit that sometimes happens when people aren't saying what they actually mean to say. And it just, I think, allows us to communicate in a way that, I don't know, that is just like more simple.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. I think that, you know, I've certainly thought that I was in love before. And I think that to some degree, yes, what I experienced was love, but I've absolutely grown in that definition and in that understanding. And I think a lot of that was driven by figuring out how to love myself fully and wholly. And that sounds super cheesy, I know. But it was when I really figured out how to love myself authentically and trust myself that I was then able to be full and whole and complete in a relationship with another person.
We say to each other all the time that we are just such different partners in this relationship than we've been in other relationships. I'm so much more patient in this relationship. And it's easy. Like all of that part has become easy. Our tough conversations are manageable. Like I don't feel the need to repeat some of my old habits, like running away from tough conversations, because I know that even when we have these tough conversations, we are going to be looking for a resolution together. And that's just so, I mean, it feels like a warm blanket. It's just such a good feeling. And I'm someone, I fall in love quickly. I think I've been in love many times in my life, and I think that they've been different types of love. I think I've had different aspects of it that I hold really dear to me and different aspects of it that didn't suit me. But this was just such a clear, I mean, it was just so instant that this was my person. I'm the one who said that I wanted to get married first. Beth proposed to me, but on his birthday, the first year we were dating, we had gone out with friends and we were celebrating, and we came back to, we got in a little hotel room to do a staycation. We came back to the hotel room and I turned to him and I said, "Are you drunk right now?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Are you going to remember this conversation tomorrow?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "I want to marry you."
And that was the coolest gift ever.
And then in a really fun, full circle way, his birthday the next year was when he proposed.
I was married before. I deployed, and shortly after coming home from that deployment, we decided that that wasn't going to work for either of us any longer. I got divorced, took some time to kind of figure myself out, came out as a trans man and started my transition. And it was really important to me that Kelsey and I met shortly after that. So she's been here throughout my transition, but it's important to me that that's something that I started before we met, and that I figured that out on my own. And by on my own, I mean when I wasn't in a relationship necessarily. So having you here throughout that process, and having your support emotionally and oftentimes physically. Kelsey gives me my shot once a week because that's hard to do.
And because I'm becoming a nurse.
And because you're becoming
a nurse. It's really good practice. It's selfish, honestly.
You're going to be the best shot giver.
Beck has a lot of past privilege. He is often assumed to be a cisgender male. So when we are walking down the street, we are very hetero-presenting. When we are interacting with people in the general world, we are assumed to be hetero, which is completely fine. And also, sometimes I am wanting that queerness to be a bit more visible. There's, you know, the queer community is so beautiful and so great, and there are these really gorgeous, tiny stranger moments that I sometimes miss. Like, it's when a queer person sees, when a visibly queer person sees a visibly queer person out in the street, there's a little nod and a little just like, "Hi, hello," you know, like this teeny piece of connection that I sometimes miss. And it's obviously, there are so many positives to this one tiny negative. And I think that it's definitely a journey that I'm going to continue to go on to have my own queerness be rooted firmly and only in my own identity. It comes from within me and not outside of me, not from my presentation and not from my relationships. But I think separating my queerness from my relationships has been hard for me. It's not something that I'm super proud of, but it's something that has taken a little bit more time for me.
Visibility matters. Visibility is so important, especially in the queer community. You spoke about the safety aspect, and yeah, there is safety in walking down the street and not being visibly queer. On the other hand, that's not going to change with less queer visibility, right? So there's this piece where, you know, I want to walk down the street and say, this is what a trans man looks like, you know, and that's okay. And that's great. And we want to be able to walk down the street and say, this is what queer people look like. But the privilege is in our safety in doing it. Because I figured myself out and began my transition under President Trump's executive order, which banned transgender service, I was at risk for being fired or being discharged or separated from the military. I'm really lucky to have an incredibly supportive chain of command. So I was able to come out to my superiors pretty early on, prior to now President Biden lifting that ban, which I'm super grateful for. But there was a long time that that was a really scary thing. And that meant that Kelsey would have to check in before any event, you know, hey, who knows, who are we out to, who are we not out to, what pronouns do you want me to use? And it was weird to have to ask my girlfriend, my partner, the person who has always known me as a man, to say, hey, I need you to use she, her pronouns, or I need you to avoid pronouns for me. And that felt like a really big ask.
I didn't read it as a big ask. I was happy to do what was keeping you safe.
I haven't had occasion to wear my fancy uniform, as Kelsey would describe it, for quite some time. And in that time, my body has changed a lot. And I actually remember calling my boss before the event. And I was like, look, I'm going to wear my dress uniform and I'm gonna look really silly. I'm gonna look like a boy wearing a girl's uniform. And again, I've been so lucky to have such supportive superiors, and she told me, like, why would you wear a women's uniform? You're a man. And that was before President Biden repealed the ban, and I was really grateful for that. So we kind of decided, like, okay, this is going to be my coming out to the military and to my office and to people that I've worked with for 10 years now, and in a pretty public way. And we did. I showed up and I was wearing a tie and they were like, oh.
It was just really cool. It was just a really, really cool, special thing. And I was super proud of him. It's, like I said, I don't think it's an easy thing to do, to be that visible. It shouldn't be an event where you walking in a room wearing the correct uniform is an all eyes on you moment. And I think it's really brave. I'm just very, very proud.
It's so incredible to have a love that is clearly visible to other people. And it's not that we're trying to make it visible to other people, but it is super affirming of our relationship that our families see that and our friends see that, and they reflect that back to us, and they make it clear that, like, your love doesn't suck.
The event where Beck was able to come out to all of his colleagues in the military happened just days after the reversal of the transgender military ban. He received incredible support from his coworkers. He also wants me to note that the event was a small event and followed all COVID protocols. I want to thank all of my guests today, Charlie, Nikki and Faith, and Beck and Kelsey, for sharing their stories with us. Again, I'm Hansi Stokes. This is the WPFW Inside Out Collective. You can support the programs that you're hearing today and every day by making a donation at 202-588-9739 or by going online to pledge.wpfwfm.org.